recall those conversations with his apostles. I don't see myself in that text. But when Christ is dealing with individuals, I always try to insert myself as that individual, right? Because I'm not Christ. So I'm not the one that doesn't have any issues. So I always try to insert myself in the text and look at it from the perspective of the person that's having the conversation with Christ. So when I do that, I'm less likely to condemn the person that's in the text. I'm less likely to look at the person in the text and think, you know, the sermon that I had with the woman in the well. I always looked at that text, and I always looked at it and thought, man, she had five husbands. You know, I'm pointing at her, and I'm thinking, man, you know, I would never do that. But you know, when I slowed down and made myself, not the woman, but when I slowed down and inserted myself in the text, I began to realize, okay, you may not have had five wives, but you got five somethings. It's something, right? It's something that I need Christ for. So after I put myself in the text, I no longer looked at that lady and thought, wow, boy, she's pretty bad. No, I'm that lady, right? I'm the one that needs to have the conversation with Christ. Christ is the one who needs to have the conversation with me. I'm the one that needs help. So when I looked at Luke chapter 10, this is a very, very familiar story. I love going back and looking at texts that are very familiar because it's always something that we can pull from it. It's always something. So the Good Samaritan, most of us have heard this story our whole lives. We've always heard this story in Bible class as kids growing up, looking at the priest and the Levite. But tonight, we want to look really specifically at the question, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? And I'm thankful that the lawyer asked this question because this is something that we struggle with from time to time. You know, who should I help? You know, who is really my neighbor? Is it the person that stay next door to me? Is it the person that stay on my street? Well, we're going to see in the text, this term neighbor, as it relates to what Christ is explaining to the lawyer, it runs much deeper than your next door neighbor. It runs much deeper than your best friend or relative. So when we start in verse 25, I'm going to look at, I took the text from, it's a NIV, but it's kind of a another version of an NIV, but it was just a little bit plainer and had some thoughts in here. And I want to start at verse 25, and I want to look at, as we go down, because really we're going to hinge in the verse where he asks, who is my neighbor? But we need to work ourselves down from verse 25, right? So it begins, and this translation says, look you, an expert in the law, stood up and asked Jesus a test question. So look how this man is being described. He's a lawyer. He's an expert in the law. And we know how we perceive lawyers, right? We perceive lawyers as really knowledgeable. To be a lawyer, you have to be knowledgeable. Why? Because the law changes all the time. And you don't want somebody representing you in court that's not familiar with the law, right? We look for the best lawyer possible. So look at this man. He stands up and he asks Christ, he says, teacher or master, what is it I am to do to become the possessor of eternal life? Now, we later learn his motives are not right. He doesn't have good motives as he's approaching Christ. He's really seeking to test him. But look at Christ's response in verse 26. He said to him, "What stands written in the law? How do you read?" Doing a little research back, the Jews would wear a little deal around their brace, around their arm, that would have certain scriptures concerning the law. So when Christ asked him, "What's written in the law? How do you read it?" He's saying, "Man, look, it's right there on your wrist. You already know the answer to the question." Now, Christ is going to expose this man's heart. All right? So he says, "You must love the Lord your God with your whole heart." Then he says, "And with your whole mind, and your neighbor as yourself." You know, we've always heard, you know, people say, don't answer a question with a question. But you notice Christ answered his question with a question. Christ did that to expose this man. So the man asked Christ a question, and Christ asked him two questions. And he responds right. Christ even tells him, "Your answer is correct. You're right." He said, "You do what you just told me, and you will live." Now, he quoted from Deuteronomy 6 and 5 and Leviticus 19 and 8. Those are the scriptures that the lawyer quoted from. But don't think that everyone we run into quoting scriptures has the right motive. He doesn't have the right motive with Christ. Now, he was right in what he said. And I would think that, you know, Christ would just, it would just end there. But that's not where he's really going. Right? Christ answers, says he's right. And you would think, question answered, case closed. But look what he says going on down. Verse 28, 29, he says, "But he," and this version says, "wishing to put himself in the right." Y'all know how we sometimes approach a situation, and we approach it trying to tilt it to where it's favorable for us. We know we might not be 100% right on something. So when we ask the question, or when we approach it, we approach it kind of tilted, right? In our way, right? And that's what he does. It says that wishing to put himself in the right, he said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus answered, and he says to the man, he says, "There's a man." Now, this is where Christ begins the parable. The question alone that the lawyer poses, it shows that he's limited in who he wants or he who believes he should help. Who is my neighbor? So the lawyer is already thinking his neighbor, they're the Jews. They his people, his race, his ethnicity, his nationality. Sometimes we think that way. Sometimes we think the only people we can help is our folk. But we're getting ready to see this is not at all what Christ had in mind. A matter of fact, the most unlikely person is who helps this man. Look what he says in verse 30. And Jesus answered, "There was a man who went down from Jerusalem to Jericho." And this road from Jerusalem to Jericho did go down. It was a dangerous road. So it had twists, turns, thieves were there, robbers were there. So it was a very dangerous road. Even as I was reading, even as late as the 1930s, there was a man that said he was warned not to drive down that street after dark. The robbers would come down out of the mountains, rob the people, and get back up before the authorities could arrive. So this has been a dangerous street for a very long time. So he goes on to say that the man was traveling. Then it says he fell amongst robbers, thieves, who stripped him and laid blows on him and went away and left him half dead. Boy, you know, I think whoever wrote this translation, they must have been from Ethiopia, laid blows on him. I ain't never seen that in the text. Laid blows on him. Anyway, laid blows on him and went away and left him half dead. Verse 31, now by chance, a priest came down by that road. He looked at him and he passed by on the other side. Now put yourself in the text. Even if you don't put yourself as the priest, put yourself as the best friend of the priest and you with the priest. What would you have done? Would you have said, hey man, you know, I think maybe we need to stop? Because it doesn't say he stopped. Say he looked at him and he passed by. Now there's several, there's several reasons that I read as why the priests may have passed by. They're not supposed to touch anybody that's dead. It makes them unclean for 7 days. Perhaps he thought the man was dead. But at this point, this has nothing to do with who's our neighbor, why he stopped or why he did not stop. We know he looked at him and he passed by. And we can't condemn the priest. And the reason I say we can't condemn the priest, because we have to put ourselves in the text, because there have been times we've looked and passed by. Right? We've looked and passed by. We've seen individuals in need, and we have just kind of glanced, and for whatever reason, we made that decision right then, we're not going to help. Whether we're trying to figure out the situation or whether we're trying to figure out how they got to where they are, we just made a decision. We looked and we passed. Then, who's next? The Levite comes next. In the same way, when a Levite came to the place, he looked at him and passed by on the other side. Now these two are, in a sense, they're us. Those are the ones that you would consider religious people. Those are the ones that you would think would have helped this man. Those are the ones that you would have thought had enough compassion to stop, even if they were on their way to worship. They would have stopped and help this man. The priest passed by. The Levite looks and passed by. I was just thinking, why even look? If you're not going to help, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like a lady being on the side of the road, she got a flat tire, and you got these people driving by real slow, and they looking, but nobody's going to stop and help her. If you're not going to stop and help her, you might as well just keep it moving. Why even slow down enough to look if you're not going to help? Look what happens. Now, this is the most unlikely man. And I want to make the point that Jesus puts this man, well, let me go on to verse 33 first. A Samaritan who was on the road came to where he was. He looked too. But there's a difference. When we look at individuals that we should be benevolent towards, individuals that need help, for some reason, we are not moved with compassion. Sometimes we'll say, oh, that's terrible. I'm going to pray for them. But we're not moved with compassion. When you move with compassion, you're going to do something. You're going to do something. It says that he was moved with compassion. Well, let me go back. He on the road, he came over where he looked at him and was moved to the depths. This is what this text says. He was moved to the depths of his being with pity. He was moved to the depth of his being with pity. Jesus puts the real man in the story. Notice he says nothing about the man. He mentions he's unconscious, he's stripped of his clothing. And what he's showing us is that our neighbor is not based on location, but our hearts towards helping those in need without expecting anything in return. So as the man that was beaten is, as he's described, it has nothing to do with his location. It's about our perception towards those that need compassion. And sometimes we are just a little bit, we're not as compassionate. Sometimes we're more compassionate at home seeing something on TV and we'll get up and cash out some money. But we'll be right in front of somebody. No, they need help. And what we'll say is, I'll pray for you. That's not bad. That's not a bad thing to say. But we should be moved to the depth of our being that we want to do something. It says, verse 34, so he came up to him. So he looked, he was moved. Now he's getting ready to do something. He came up to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in wine and oil, and he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and cared for him. So he came close enough to bound up this man's wounds, which means he had to look him over to see where he was wounded. He poured wine and oil on his wounds. And instead of him saying, hey man, you know what? Now I come all this way, I ain't walking. I'm gonna ride my beast and now I done bound your wounds up. I'm gonna help you, but I ain't walking, right? We'll say, you know, I'm gonna help you, but you know, I ain't gonna give him no ride. I'm gonna go this far, but I'm not gonna go this far. What if God, because I'm telling you in the text, we the wounded. What if God passed by us? And just looked. Because the Lord don't have any issues, right? He don't need us. He don't have any issues. But what if the Lord passed by us? We've all been wounded. We've all been beat. So what if the Lord just passed by us and looked and kept going? Even Christ is moved with compassion when it comes to his children, to his brothers and sisters. God is even moved. We read over and over again that God himself was moved. When God would punish his people and then they would get right, God would be moved to help them. Then, so he didn't just bound them up. He didn't just take them. In other words, benevolence is more than just handing somebody some money. Benevolence is more than just handing somebody a sack of groceries. As Christians, we have to go further than that because it's not the physical that's the top priority. Now, we have to meet that need. Our priority is the soul of the man. That's why the question of who my neighbor is important. The question of who my neighbor is really has nothing to do with how I help him physically. That is a part of it. But the reason, the concern about who my neighbor is because I need to see everybody as my neighbor. That way I'm motivated to help them spiritually. If I don't see you as my neighbor, I'm not gonna waste any time. I'm not gonna waste any time with you. It says on the next day, this is verse 35. On the next day, he put down 10 pence, and gave it to the innkeeper. So look how far beyond he is going. He could have said, man, look, I didn't bound your wounds. I didn't put you on my beast. I walked while you roll. I'm going to get you to the end. Man, you on your own. Y'all know that's one of our favorite sayings. I'm going to do this, and then you on your own. Isn't that what we say? I'm going to do this. Now, after I do this, I don't want you looking for nothing else. This is it. And we feel good. We feel good by saying that. We feel good because we feel like we've done something. But we'll say, man, you know, you're on your own. I've said it before. Hey, you know what, man? Look, I know you need some, man. I'm going to take you down here. I'm going to get you something to eat. And after that, you figure it out from there. This Samaritan not only bound his wounds, not only put him on the beast, brought him to the inn. He tells the innkeeper, look after him. He said, and whatever more you are out of pocket, when I come back this way, boy, no, this had to be a brother wrote this thing. I'll square up with you in full. But I ain't never read that. Y'all read that? Well, I'm telling you, put blows on them. I'll square up with you. Okay, back. I'm sorry, I didn't take us out. But he tells the innkeeper, in short, look, I'm gonna leave this man here. And however long he stayed, notice he didn't put a time limit on how long the man could stay. Matter of fact, he didn't even talk to the man. He talked to the innkeeper, which means the man can stay until he's well enough to leave. Because he talks to the innkeeper and he tells the innkeeper, I'll pay you. When I come back down this road, I'll take care of you. Then verse 36 is where Christ asked him, which of these three do you think was neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? There's three things. There's three things that Christ encompasses in his response. One, we must help people regardless of whether they brought the trouble on themselves or not. Well, we struggle with that one. Especially when we know people have brought the trouble on themselves. Now, the Samaritan could have said, man, you know better not to travel this road by yourself. You know better not to be with a group of people when you travel this road. He didn't say that. He wasn't concerned with how that man got to where he was. You know what his concern was? Helping him. But we try to figure out. Some of us, we try to figure out,
what's the deal with you match the dots? Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Well, we try to put the puzzle together. Before we make a determination whether or not we're going to help somebody, we figure out how they got there, what decision that they made that was bad, how they could have done this, they should have done that. And then by the time we done all that, we talked ourselves out of helping them. I'm not gonna help you now because you got yourself in this mess. All I'm saying is, that's not Christ's way. That's not what the Lord expects of us. I'm guilty of sizing stuff up. I'm guilty of sizing things up. And then determining, okay, now if I'm gonna help you, you knew better. You knew better, right? But he didn't bother with any of that.
Some of us will say, you knew better, so you just get what you get. It is what it is. You're on the side of the road. You knew not to be on the road. That's what you get.
I mean, that's kind of how we, all I'm saying is that that's not how we should be as Christians. That's Satan. That's Satan plants those thoughts. Somehow we become better than the person that needs our help. But that's a thought that's planted by Satan, right? Because we didn't make the mistake they made, somehow. Now, we won't say it. Oh, we're not going to say it. But somehow, we elevate ourselves above those that need help. Well, you know, if I were you, I would have. Okay, well, he passed that. This man beat up on the ground, half dead. He passed the lecture. There's no need in lecturing him now on what he should have done, right? It's then any person of any nation who is in need is our neighbor. Our help must be as wide as the love of the Lord. So when we are benevolent, when we're considering who our neighbor is, we have to see individuals as the Lord sees them. Christ didn't come down here and say, okay, who should I help? Who's my neighbor? Who's in the family? Matter of fact, he was criticized with hanging with sinners. Thirdly, and I am almost done. Thirdly, the help must be practical. In other words, it must fit the need and not consist merely in feeling sorry. So it's not enough just to feel sorry for someone that's in need. It's not enough. James chapter 2, verse 14 through 17, he said, it's not enough when you see somebody's hungry, you just say, go and be filled. Huh? Is that enough? So if you come to me and you need gas to get to work, and I say, well, just go down to the racetrack and pull up beside the pump. I at least showed you where the racetrack. I got you to the racetrack. Just pull up beside the pump and pray. What is that going to do? Is that going to fill the tank? No, that's not going to fill the tank. And what Christ is saying is, I'm expecting you to do for others what I have done for you. None of us here are where we are independent of ourselves, without Christ. Nobody. I don't care if you think you are. None of us here are where we are without God's help. Without God's help, and we're not even doing right sometimes. Perhaps the priest and Levite, you know, maybe they did feel pity for him, but they didn't do anything. So I'm saying it's we have to go beyond the world's expectations. Because the world say, you know what? Look, you didn't create that mess. Don't fool with that mess. That's what the world says, that you ain't got a dog in that fight. Stay out of that. When it comes to helping somebody, he says in verse 36, this is the response, verse 37, the response of the lawyer.
He said, he who showed mercy on him, when Christ asked him, who do you think is your neighbor? Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. And that's the message for us. We need to go and do likewise. Now, he put a simple parable out there. In other words, we cannot misunderstand what we just read. You don't have to have a college degree to understand what we just read. So when Christ says, go and do likewise, he's saying, I know you understood what I just said. So I want you to go and do what this Samaritan has done. We get caught up in our own perceptions of who needs help and who is our neighbor. But Christ sealed that. He sealed that in the text. So your neighbor is not just, you know, person living next door to you. Your neighbor is not just the person that's in the cube next to you at work. Your neighbor, my neighbor, is anyone that we see that's in need. But we can't just see it. It has to move us. It has to move us. If it doesn't move us, we're not going to do anything. As a congregation, we have to be moved when individuals come amongst us that need help. Even with our members, we have to be moved. He's looking for us to duplicate what the Samaritan did. And the Samaritan was the most unlikely person to help this man. You know, this lesson really has been, it's really it's been good for me. I'm gonna tell you why. It's been good for me because with this climate that we're in, this political climate, sometimes Satan will get on you. And because someone doesn't think the way we think or share our opinions, we don't want to help them. I'm gonna leave you, and I really don't like really sharing necessarily stories, but I'm gonna leave you with a story. Now this story, it involves me, but I wasn't on the right end. This happened, this is probably 19 years ago. This has to do with who was my neighbor. 19 years ago, my dad passed on a Tuesday. I was in grad school. So I decided that I was going to quit. It was too much. I mean, my dad and I were close. We were, you know, all of that stuff, right? So I had to go Thursday out. A friend of mine took me out to my class to pick up my books for the next class that was getting ready to start. In this particular program, there were 16 of us. We were divided in groups of four because we had projects to do, right? So we had projects, presentations, all this stuff to go. Now, in my group, I want you to pay attention. In my group, with me, I was the only minority. I don't know this guy's name because he ended up dropping out after about 4 or 5 weeks. And then it was Melody and Darla. Now, Darla was young, kind of quiet, but Melody, man, that Melody. Melody was a hard-nosed Republican. I want you to see the picture. Lived on a kind of a farm back north. She drove in for the classes. And you know, conversations would erupt in the class about politics. And I always stayed out of it. I always just sat back, watched, and listened. And I used to think to myself, ooh, that Melody, I would not fool with her. I mean, that's my thought, because she is just chomping at the bit. She's chomping about welfare. She's chomping about, I mean, anything to really help somebody. Man, she was jamming that thing up. And so I'm sitting there. This is before my dad passed. So we would meet on Tuesdays to get our little stuff together off-site, and then we'd meet on Thursday night. So my perception of Melody, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Now, I didn't say anything to her, and I stayed out those conversations. But by just sitting and listening to her, my whole perception was she don't like minorities. That's what I gathered from just listening to her. Now we fast forward. Go out to class, pick up my books. I didn't tell my mother. I didn't tell my wife I was quitting. But it was just too much for me. And I thought, I can come back and finish later. This is November. I'm due to finish in May of the following year. So I only had about 6-7 months left. But I could not process all of this stuff that had happened with my dad passing and concentrate and get through my last few months. We buried my dad on Saturday. Monday, I get a call. Guess who it is? It's Melody. So I'm wondering, you know, why she's calling me. So she says, "Hey, Larry." She extends her condolences, and, you know, we get through that. And then she says, "Hey, Darla and I are going to carry you for the next two classes." I said, "What?" She said, "I know this is tough. We're going to carry you for the next two classes." The next two classes, I didn't write a paper. If I had a paper to do, Darla and Melody wrote it and emailed it to me. If we had a presentation, Darla and Melody put it together, highlighted what I needed to go over in front of the class, and I just got up and did my part. The person, the most unlikely person, from my perspective, in that room was my neighbor, and I missed her. I missed her. I let her opinions about political stuff move me from even approaching her spiritually. And who helped me? Who helped me? I didn't, and I got A's in both of those classes. Now, I say that to say I was going to quit. Now, I was going to go back later, but I couldn't do it. And here comes Melody, the person that I already made up in my mind I probably wouldn't fool with. Matter of fact, she'd invited some of us over to her house before, and I thought, If Melody is like this, her husband is probably like this, her friends are probably like this, and I'm going to get over here and I'm going to be caught up. Right? I may not even make it out, way out here in the country. But you know what? I was 100% wrong. Melody ended up being my neighbor. Nobody else in that class offered to help me. And I didn't even ask for help. She had no idea I was quitting. I said nothing to anyone. And yet Melody was the Samaritan that helped me on my road when I was beat up, when I was bleeding, when I needed help. So all I'm saying is that we have to stop developing perceptions of people before we decide whether or not we're going to help them. Because I'm telling you, I was wrong. And I was shocked. I cried.
I cried. This lady is actually helping me, and I had these kind of thoughts about her. Melody was my neighbor. That's the type of neighbor we should be. And again, Satan is distracting us in this climate, church. I'm telling you, boy, he's working on us. He's working on us. Man, this stuff is on the news every day, right? We reading these tweets, these crazy, all of this stuff. And it's Satan working on us to get us away from being benevolent, from considering certain groups of people our neighbor. It's all part of his plan. He know we get upset over stuff like that. But as Christians, what we have to do is we have to see ourselves. Well, no, let me go back. We are Christians first. We Christians first. So before you African-American or Caucasian or Hispanic or whatever that is, right? Whatever that is, we are a Christian first. What's going to get me to heaven is not the pigmentation of my skin. It's whether or not I'm found faithful. So let's just consider and go back and read that story. I just didn't have time to go through it like I wanted to. I did going over it myself, but there is so much there when you go back and just slow down and read and consider the text and put yourself on that road, even if you just there observing. God not only expects that from us, it goes further. He requires. That is a requirement. That's why he said, go and do. He didn't say, well, okay, you know, you heard the story now. You know, if that fits where you are in your life, then go ahead and do that. No, he said, you go and you do exactly like what I just told you. If you're here tonight and you're not a member of the Lord's church, we really want you to become a member of the Lord's church. Christ has more to offer than just bandaging up your wounds and putting wine and oil on them and getting you to an end. Christ has salvation to offer. So not only will he take care of us physically, because he does, but there's something much more important than that. And so if you're not a member of the Lord's church, it's simple. You hear the word, you believe, repent, confess, and you're baptized for the remission of your sins. Then the Lord adds you to his church. You can't even have that type of benevolent spirit. I know we know some good people. I know we know some nice people. But our benevolence goes beyond what's expected in the world. Our benevolence looks at that person and we see a lost soul. That's what we see as members of the church. Maybe you're here tonight and you just need prayer. Maybe we need to be more